Okay, is everybody back?
Okay.
Yep, I'm back.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, so my travel. So we had the Earth Lab. Earth Labs is our climate change curriculum project. It's funded by NSF's DR K-12 program, Discovery Research K-12. So the program has a research focus around student learning, and the focus research question is about change over time. How can we help students develop a deeper understanding of change over time and space on multiple and embedded scales? But we've developed over a period of a year, we've developed a curriculum for a high school capstone course and had worked with a small group of teachers to provide feedback and to pilot pieces of it. And then this summer, we spent a week in Texas with those teachers we've been working with presenting to a larger group of teachers on how to use the modules. And there's three of them, one on climate and the cryosphere, one on climate and weather and the biosphere, and one on carbon. And then we spent another week in Mississippi working with those two. So and the same thing, a group of teachers we've been working with for a year presented to this larger group of teachers, and the research component comes in this coming year where the teachers, both the teachers we've been working with for a year and some of the teachers that receive the professional development this summer will implement in their classrooms and will collect data on student learning. And these modules are each 3 weeks long, and there are three of them, so it'll be a somewhat longer implementation. But it was really an interesting process. We've been in Texas for a while, and so the teachers are used to the professional development, but this is the first time we're in Mississippi, and the teachers there, first of all, are starving for professional development. And secondly, one of the teachers, we were talking to her at dinner, and what we had intended was we had asked that the teachers get their principals to sign off on their participation, mostly because if they were going to implement in their classrooms, they kind of needed their permission. And one of the teacher's principals wanted to refuse to let her come at all, whether she implemented in the classroom or not, because they just didn't believe that it was an appropriate subject that anybody should be learning about. So it took Curry, our liaison at Mississippi State, an hour on the phone with that principal to allow that teacher to come. So
yeah,
I mean, those are the kinds of struggles that that we were dealing with there. That was what I was going for originally, and then the program at NSF that funds that had their PI meeting in Arlington.
So, Tamara, how did this teacher find out? I don't want you to dwell on it too long because I know there's a lot of other stuff, but did she find out about your curriculum through the conference or something? And then she
It was really an accident. What we had done is we had our main contact in each state. One was in Texas, it was the University of Texas, Austin, and in Mississippi, it was Mississippi State University, and it was through those universities we have the partners, the co-PIs on the project. And what they had done is they had sent out the flyer about the availability of this program through as many avenues as they could think of. And
right. She
just happened by accident across it. It wasn't that somebody promoted it or anything to her. She just found it by accident. And now they're going to be telling, I mean, some of them are going to, because in Mississippi, they're really kind of starving for this professional development. They're informing, because we actually do this one more time. Next summer we will do a similar kind of workshop. And we're trying to develop a model where teachers can present this, provide guidelines for this professional development for teachers to present to other teachers without as much support as we're giving them now by providing the materials that teachers that we're refining now in these professional development programs. But that's how she found out about it, was really by accident. And she signed up for the program.
She had curiosity, didn't she?
Yes. Well, I'm telling you, we have another teacher in Mississippi, so this material was written, intended for high school capstone course, high school seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And when this past year we piloted it, and basically there was no research, but we wanted input from this, you know, what the students had done so we could improve the modules. And one of our teachers did all the assessments orally, and which is more difficult for us to integrate what the how to improve the modules. And we asked her why, and it's because her high school seniors read on the second grade level.
Got it.
And
yep.
And so, you know, we had not anticipated that situation. And basically, she drives 2 hours each way to her school. And we asked her why, and she says that nobody else cares. Her kids need her, so she does this. So, I mean, their teaching is tremendously dedicated. And
yeah.
Negligence on the part of administration to allow students to get to be seniors in high school without being able to read. So there's a lot of obstacles to overcome here. So anyway, and then my last thing was I went to, in Florida, after all of this, I went to Florida to the Sea Level Rise Summit to present the clean materials. But it was a very impressive meeting for the one. I was only there for one of the 2 days. But it's a very engaged, very diverse community. Caroline Lewis's CLIO project
yep.
was very strongly represented there. I unfortunately couldn't provide them a video because of the timing, but I did provide them. They had this question, which I said I would disseminate and ask other people to contribute to their database. But the question was, what is climate change all about? And then what is my role? So if you want to provide that information back to CLIO from your perspective, you can do that. I did that in writing. They had people there doing videos also, but like I said, because of the timing, I was not able to do the video. So anyway, so it was a very interesting couple of weeks. So are there any other announcements? I've sort of been talking a lot. Okay, well, I can tell you one other thing. I think I've mentioned earlier that during the course of all of this, I also had to write a proposal. And what that was for Clean Core activities. And so hopefully we will have funding ongoing from NOAA. Of course, this is not guaranteed yet. It's got to be reviewed and so forth. But that was the proposal so that Clean can go on and we can continue to engage with developers and teachers to spread this word. So hopefully that'll get funded.
Great, great. Thank you, Tamara. From one who is at a general science inquiry level and is not able to target climate change as a target, I appreciate that you've done this.
Well, so let's see, what else? The approvals for the AGU sessions came out. So we have 9 sessions that we've coordinated, and I'm working on, there's 2 other climate change sessions that I've kind of sent out an email to potentially engage in being part of our suite. And as soon as I hear from them, I'll start advertising the AGU sessions. The abstracts for those, I think, are due August 8th, and the GSA sessions, the abstracts are due August 14th. So those dates are coming up.
Great.
And let's see, what else we did? Oh, we had the DRK-12 PI meeting. Karen Holwig and I ran a session on climate change. There are a lot of, I think there's probably at least a dozen, maybe on the order of 15, environmentally related DRK-12 projects, is Discovery Research K-12 projects that are currently not considered part of the tri-agency climate change education projects just because they're not funded by what's identified as climate change education dollars. And
right.
So we, Karen has a DRK-12 project that is defining, and Bora, you probably know a lot about this, the environmental literacy competencies or components. And so we had, and we engaged about 5 or 6 of the DRK-12 environmentally relevant projects to map their projects onto the climate literacy central principles and these and environmental literacy components to see how we sort of all fit together. And we did agree to become a special interest group within CADRE, which is the organizing group around the DRK-12 projects. and hopefully eventually, I've invited them all to become members of the Climate Literacy Network, and to hopefully get them engaged with the tri-agency group, which I know they're sort of thinking about maybe they should open up their ranks to those relevant projects that weren't explicitly funded by climate change dollars. But it was a very interesting interesting session. So let's see what else. We have started hearing about the CSEP phase twos. For most of the, I don't know, has anybody on the phone heard of positive news?
Yeah.
I've only heard positive news from one group, and that's the New England Aquarium. And my understanding is that they had a site visit and they're now just waiting. So it's not like a yes yet. But it's not a no. But most of the others I know about were turned down. Is anybody else planning other kinds of climate literacy related activities this summer?
We have our, this is Kristen, our Summer Institute coming up in August. And we have 75 teachers registered.
Terrific.
And we just...
Are these all high school teachers, all middle school teachers?
They're grades 5 through 12.
Mm-hmm.
Grades 5 through 12 from Minnesota. They're coming from all over the state. We still have... It's our last year of funding from a state trust fund grant, so we had money to pay for mileage and accommodations for them. So it's 2 days. We've got a great lineup of speakers and breakout sessions. Jeannie Scott's coming out to speak the evening before, and John Abraham is from Climate Response Team speaking in the morning of the first day. And we also just found out we could do the park. We also have been working with the Parks Climate Challenge Group, which is through the National Park Foundation. So we have a small group of teachers that will be doing some extra background on the Mississippi River and climate change impacts, and then they will be able to get funding to bring their teachers on a field, their students on a field trip back to the river during the school year to learn a little bit more about that. So that's a fun little piece of it. And otherwise, it's a lot. I always forget how much planning this is. Once it hits June, it's sort of like, okay, here we go. So here we go.
How many times have you done this already?
This is my fourth summer.
Can you send us information about it?
Sure. Yeah. I would love to. I'll send our blast, and then it has the link to all the info.
Great.
So yeah.
And maybe you can think about give me a presentation on how it went next fall or something.
Yeah, it's once again, it's focused on this Minnesota's Changing Climate Project we had. So it's introducing them to that curriculum, which we actually had was great because we could actually pilot it this year and we did some pretty good improvements to it and are having it reprinted. And so it's very Minnesota-centric. Next summer, actually, we'll be shifting more towards energy. We just received some funding to work on a energy curriculum and training. So I'm sure I'll be bugging a lot of you for some ideas on that soon. Got to get through this one first.
Hey, Kristen, is that you?
Yeah.
This is Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, so on that the energy one, I don't know if you remember that when the energy literacy was released, we had already tagged all of the clean resources using the new energy literacy framework.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
So the reason I'm bringing it up in this context is just to see if some of the, I think there's somewhere in the excess of 90 resources, maybe more in the coming months, that are already tagged to that structure. So, you know, that might be something to lean on when you're doing that.
Yeah, I was looking through those. You know, it's this challenge of coming up with something that's unique, but obviously we don't want to replicate the wheel, and the funding comes through an organization called Center for Energy and the Environment that's really focused on efficiency. But we also just passed a solar bill here in the state, which is for schools. It's going to help schools, public buildings. And so we also want to focus on energy renewables as well. So it's coming up with some things that are original as well. But I also, what did I just come, the NEED project?
Yeah.
Does anyone, are you familiar?
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's one of, course. Well, that's one of the,
yeah.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, they're unbelievable. I was kind of wanted to just repackage what they have and move on.
Can you describe what the NEED project is?
What's it, the National Energy Education? Is that what it stands for?
Yeah, something like
yeah.
that.
Development or something
National
like that.
National Energy Education Development Project.
Yeah, yeah. exactly. And
project
in
NEED.
2011, it's only just last year, they came out with all these different curriculum modules that are just really, really neat, different ways of, different, all the different aspects pretty much they cover. And we would just be developing another, probably some sort of six-lesson module that was more like a unit for teachers. But it's great. It's great stuff they've got out there. If any of you worked on it, good job.
Well, when Matthew Inman and Michelle Fox were developing the energy literacy structure, they had been working, obviously, NEED and Department of Energy together quite a bit. And so I know there's some offsets from what we're trying to do in clean relative to energy and what NEED was doing, but there is definitely areas for collaboration between those two. So one person you may want to talk to is Michelle Fox at the Department of Energy, just to kind of engage her on you know, what other pieces of that she's aware of that you might find valuable.
Great. Thanks.
And then the more regionalization of energy.
Well, that's what I'm hoping to do, you know, make it more relevant here, just state at a state level.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because that's there's a lot of stuff in clean that might be good for other spots that you would want to differentiate regionally.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's where it gets fun.
So, Frank, this is Marta. So, to access those old emails or what you were talking about before that have to do with energy, how do I do that?
I'll reply to the list for today's call with the URL that will take you right to the energy literacy part of clean.
Cool.
How about
Thanks.
That?
Perfect.
And,
are there any other things going on? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jane Heinz-Fry, and I can share with the group that the Museum Institute for Teaching Science will be offering 5 summer institutes across Massachusetts this summer, focusing on links between science inquiry and engineering design. While these don't target climate change explicitly, I'm expecting at least 2 of those will be addressing phenology-type studies. And we also have the New England Aquarium as one of our partners in the Boston region. So they'll be addressing corals and the environment that corals face.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say while we don't address climate change explicitly, it's almost always included, no matter what our topic or what our theme is. It's just
is something
so far-reaching.
Yeah, well, this is something that when I was at the Sea Level Rise Summit in Florida last week, engineering is a big piece of that because a lot of their focus is on, the built environment.
Renewable energy,
Energy, well, not only renewable energy, but how do you build buildings and where do you build buildings and the engineering behind it to, you know, make things be adaptable to this, the changing situation.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, this is Kristen again. We just had a great article in our local paper about, you may have all been following what's been going on in Duluth, Minnesota. The last couple of weeks, or last week, there was major flooding that really demolished the city. And they are, the mayor and the city council is talking about how they need to be adapting to a changing climate, like outwardly in the city now. And they're kind of one of the first cities, I guess, to really start outwardly talking about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, Kristen, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So there's an interesting opportunity that comes with those kind of situations. I don't know if anybody on the call was at the Communicating Oceans and Climate Change Summit for the Aquaria over the summer. But one of the things that showed up was this idea that when you have a catastrophic loss at a community level, it's a wonderful opportunity to change the, to improve resiliency and kind of build in a new way, because you have to, instead of putting everything back the way it was quickly, you can actually change the way, because you have to reinvest. And a lot of stuff that failed, you can do it in a new way. And where this comes from is Greensburg, Kansas, that just got completely annihilated by a tornado. And the way they built their community back was much more sustainable and resilient to the changes that they faced than they had. They didn't design it intentionally that way. So there's some really interesting thinking about how to kind of take a loss and become more resilient in the process of rebuilding.
I would like to build right on that. I went to a conference in Chile last year, and there were some young engineers that took us on a tour of the city. And they were able, the city had suffered an earthquake, but then they rebuilt with engineering design that is more resilient to earthquakes. So I'm with you on that. I think that's a good way for us to be thinking.
Yep. I'll send the link to, it's like Greensburg, Greenville, something like that. I have it in my email.
Nice.
That's it.
So one other thing I wanted to mention, Jane, you said that you were going to have one of your sessions or workshops was going to be around corals?
Yes.
Okay, so I just wanted to let you know that there is live on our Earth Lab site a corals module with six labs just around looking at and studying corals. So I can send you the URL for that if you're interested.
I'm very interested. That would be fabulous.
There's another resource that is done well in the CLEAN collection that's done by NOAA, which is the digital data in the classroom project. I don't know if you're aware of this, but our corals program has released a beta version of that for ocean acidification, which is obviously one of the issues that corals face. Would that be something that
Yeah, if you can get that to me, I'll pass it on, and I'm really happy to do that.
Awesome. All right. You're fine. I'll take care of that for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there other things that people... topics that people would like to discuss?
I suppose everybody has maybe seen the news that the appeals court upheld the EPA emission rules concerning the endangerment finding and all of that. Did you all see that?
Absolutely.
No. So what was that again?
This morning, a federal appeals court unanimously upheld the EPA's greenhouse gas regulations, beginning with the endangerment finding and also the tailpipe rule and the tailoring rule, which in my field in air quality regulation was very contentious, and they basically upheld all of it. All of the challenges.
Wow.
And Kentucky was one of the states that was basically fighting it in the lawsuit. So that's where I'm from. So big news here.
Yeah. Very big news. Thank you.
Make your school.
I'll send out to
just
the
just a
list
question to the group.
The story.
Great, thank you.
Does anybody have an update on the or status check on the CSEP phase revisions?
I asked that earlier, Frank. You know, you're cutting in and out a lot. It's hard for me to understand all of your words. But
okay, I'll call in from another phone.
I did ask, and nobody had any. I asked if anybody had news that was positive. And the only one I've heard of is from the New England Aquarium, and they're still in a waiting mode, as far as I know. They had a virtual site visit, but they're just now waiting. Other than that, most of the others I heard were negative.
I haven't heard from the two that I was on the advisory group for. But
which ones were those?
The Great Lakes we were working with. But Scott's on the phone, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
You heard no on that?
Heard no on that.
Okay, so there's one. And then the cycles, native ways of knowing here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Gillian Rorick is the PI.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that one went in, but I hadn't heard one way or the other. And I'm still waiting. There's another one that we're part of. I don't remember the exact title, but it's Colorado Plateau and Native Americans and Other Underserved Populations, and I haven't heard anything from them either.
Okay.
Who put that one in? This is Marta.
Her name is Jane Marks.
Oh, yes.
I knew it would come to me.
Yes.
Thanks.
So, Tamara, were you had mentioned you were going to pull together a spreadsheet for those of us looking for speakers,
Tamara,
for AGU.
Have you heard notes from a lot?
Frank, if that's you, we can't understand you at all.
It's like a robot.
Yeah.
Gargling.
He's taking this engineering thing too seriously.
I will put together a spreadsheet probably later today or first thing tomorrow. I will put together a spreadsheet, and the purpose of the spreadsheet is for the conveners to list the people they're going to be inviting so that we make sure that we're not competing for the same speakers and just continue communicating with each other. So I will get that up, and I will send an email to all of those who are co-conveners so that everybody will have access to it.
Perfect.
So I did send out emails contacting all of our sessions this morning just to get people moving forward on identifying their invited speakers. For those of you who basically the timeline is that the conveners have until July 20th to enter into the system invited speakers, which means those speakers have to be confirmed that they will submit an abstract. And then the deadline for abstracts, I believe, is August 8th. And so it's not too long after the July 20th deadline that the abstracts have to be in. What will happen then is that the AG will see how many abstracts get submitted, and then for those sessions that don't have many abstracts, they'll make an attempt to combine sessions. And we've asked if we could provide input into how to combine sessions, because last year they combined sessions without our input, and sometimes the combinations didn't make any sense at all. We, you know, we had other ideas about what would have made better sense. So I don't know if they'll let us do that or not, but we did offer.
Right. On a very low-key note, I happen to have a daughter who's doing research on ice quakes up in Alaska this summer. And she did go to AGU for the first time last year. She did research down in Texas on caves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if she has her act together this year, she hopefully will be heading to AGU again this year. So
perfect.
I'm hoping to, she's an undergraduate. So I'm excited to have her engaged at this stage of her life. And so I'll look forward as this team develops its strands to sharing that information with her so she'll know what's going on and different sessions that may be useful for her to attend.
Okay, great. Yes, it is a huge meeting, and it, I mean, on the order of 20,000 people attend this meeting.
It is huge. She told me last year it was just hugely overwhelming, but I think very exciting also.
Yeah.
It
well,
is.
You can usually, with the poster sessions, you find the section that's of interest to you, and you can find your smaller community. So it's overwhelming. There's lots of people, but there's lots of opportunity to network and engage. So that's great.
Yeah, it's a good meeting.
To shift gears to the NAAEE conference, has anybody gotten responses yet? I know they're supposed to be sent out soon.
Karen, thank you for asking that. We haven't heard yet either.
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
I don't
Karen,
think that
I did.
They've been sent out. They're just still doing work. The workshops is the one piece that's going out, I think, last week and this week,
okay.
The pre-conference. I know they're not supposed to be called pre-conference anymore, but the Wednesday workshops.
The ones before the conference.
Anybody
planning on going?
Kristen.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be there. I heard back from them, but I think it's because they were condensing my session with another. They put us together. They said there was a lot of submissions to that particular strand.
Mm. Well, I'm planning on going, but I haven't heard anything yet.
So. Okay.
We should plan on getting together.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You going, Roberta?
Yes. Yeah,
yay.
I'm really excited. Never been to Oakland. Never been out there.
Oh, fun.
Just to let you guys know, I finally was able to get back in.
Okay,
good bone you found this time.
Oh, and it sounds very clear.
I'm not gargling anymore.
You came back in, and it was even, I don't know if you were trying to call in again, but you sounded like you were staccato beats.
Yeah, well, welcome to the down budgets of Noah.
Slicing phone calls into pieces now and only...
they're saving every nickel and dime they can, I was using Google Phone as a way to, it's so sad.
It is.
Oh. It's pathetic. But, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you wanted to share, Frank?
Well, the other thing I wanted to, we had talked to, in the past meetings about this idea of the all the CSEP phase two, especially if we're getting all these no's that are coming out, how to engage the 30-plus people who want to be part of a conversation to say, well, you've done all this brilliant thinking. Not all of it's great, but you've done all this thinking. Maybe some of it's brilliant. And how do they all relate to each other, and what's the path forward for taking that thinking and finding another way of getting that work done that's not through MSF funding, but, there's got to be a sum that's, better than the parts are got to be woven together and then make a more compelling pitch.
Yeah. I think I've already started conversations with some of those, but finding out who submitted to those that we don't know, NSF's not really allowed to.
I'm fully aware of that.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have to self-identify. We know the phase ones,
right.
And then some of them others we may not ever find out.
Yeah.
Because it's not appropriate.
Well, I can certainly even. I have the list because we've already engaged it. Almost every single phase one has given a talk on the Climate Literacy Network. So we have all of their contact information, and we can certainly send an email out to all of them, inviting them to engage in the conversation, and we can help them explore. I mean, they all probably have their own avenues for thinking this through, but we can offer them the broader community of the Climate Literacy Network to explore that further.
Right. And you know, I mean, one of this relates to another thing that I've been working on, which is it's like the larger logic model of how climate literacy works in the nation.
Wow.
And a lot of those, if you're really going to make a compelling argument for actually improving climate literacy on such an important issue in such an important country, you might want to be thinking about it like that. And those projects have really thought through. I mean, Scott, you're part of the Great Lakes Group.
Yeah.
I mean, they really thought carefully about how to improve climate literacy for certain parts of that community at the Great Lakes level.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Clipsy's done that, and others have done it in different ways.
Part of the thing is that those projects that were part of Phase 1 had funds to do some pretty extensive survey work. I mean, I certainly know that we did quite a bit. And I think Karen, talking about Clipsy, they certainly did quite a bit of work. So we have an enormous amount of material that gets a sense of what's going on in each of these regions.
Scott, I don't know if you have a sense, but I mean, one of the things that I was concerned on, especially before the proposals were due, was a sense of competitiveness, and so people were keeping quiet about what they were proposing. Do you think that people would be more willing to share now, or are people going to still be protective of what they've put together?
Well, this is Scott again. My sense, and again, just from my own little perspective here, is that since it doesn't sound like we expect another solicitation of the same scale as CSEP2, I think, Frank, maybe you have a better sense of that. I don't think we're looking at another time to put a big projects together like this. I'm guessing that folks are going to look at, well, what parts can we save from what we've put together in these phase two solicitations. So I'm thinking people want to sort of say, we've invested a certain amount, let's look at other ways in which we could make them happen.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I'm certainly very happy to reach out, and if people do want to keep things quiet, then that's their prerogative, I guess.
Sure.
Absolutely, but Scott, you're raising a really important point, and if we go back to a smaller, take little bites at it approach, which is very probable is what's going to happen, but even the CSEP Phase 2 was just not even close to enough.
Oh God!
I'm very certain that it wasn't ever going to be enough.
Right.
And so what is a more compelling group pitch than where those funds come from? Really unclear, but at least we should have a compelling case for what would we do if we could do it better than, you know, let's do the best we can, which is just not cutting it.
That's where your notion of the national sort of logic model makes a huge amount of sense, is what is the national plan for this? What are the kinds of things that we can be doing?
Right.
And just put it out there.
Yeah. I mean, this is ultimately what I'd hoped the roundtable at the NRC was going to be, and it never really went there.
Yeah.
If I think the Climate Literacy Network might be a much more practical community than what the that group was done, and I think there's so much rich thinking that this idea is coming from four of the CSEP Phase 2s that were starting to talk already before they got the decisions. And I know at least one of those four did not get funded. I don't know about the other three. So, I mean, a lot of people are going to be sitting in this space, and they're not going to be sitting there too long before they move on to something else.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I think that's a really important concept.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Karen?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Karen, the other thing is that, you know, maybe the NAAEE meeting might be, you know, I don't know the best forum or the best pathway or the next step here is, but I mean, I think that if we have to keep this, keep the iron on the anvil while it's hot, if we're going to pound something useful out of it.
Right.
Well, I can get that conversation started with my email list for the at least the phase twos the phase ones that we know, and then there's at least two that were not phase ones that I know submitted as phase two, so we can sort of see how that plays. I don't know how many proposals there were altogether.
I've heard somewhere in the order of 30, but I don't know. I mean, who knows if that's at all close.
Well, I do know that there were 37 letters of intent, but that doesn't mean, I mean, obviously that I would have expected on the order of 20 to 25, given that number of letters of intent. But
I saw a letter
really know.
Still that said it was 30. So
okay.
Yeah.
But all that said, I mean, there's still there's a richness in the community right now for strategic
mm-hmm.
thinking that how we shift that to a much more, and we're going to have to do it virtually. We're not all going to be sitting in the same place at the same time anytime soon. Clearly, travel funds are diminished greatly, so we're going to have to push ourselves. And so, Scott, maybe stuff that you and Peter have done over the years are going to have to bring us into service here.
Right.
This is Marta. What's the interface between CLEAN and the, say, that Council on Foundations or Environmental Grantmakers Association, you know, the private foundation funding world?
Or we have not had it. We would like, I mean, if we have avenues to explore that, you know, that we can pursue, that would be great. Right now, we don't have any connection to them.
To that world. I mean, I think, you know, just because of the national case and also because of the, you know, I'm here in Colorado and it's burning basically.
Right.
You know, all over the country, I think it's certainly more believable what's happening for a lot in terms of immediacy. So, I mean, I know the head of Environmental Grantmakers Association. I don't know the Council on Foundations, but I'm certainly willing to kind of explore if. I know.
I'd be happy to talk to you about the details for that.
Okay.
But you know, Marta, one of the really compelling places we are right now is because of all of the innovative funding that the federal, you know, grants have offered us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of teams have assembled really, mm-hmm. you know, compelling, strong projects, and they kind of got 3 years in, and they know what to do. Some things worked, some things didn't, and so. Transitioning some projects into a much more scalable deployment for strategic value toward this end is there's no time like the present.
Exactly.
Or some other funding structure to come in and really cherry pick the best, and you know, whatever that means. You know, how we get there is another matter. But really, there's so much potential that we've never had before. And
right.
How we get from where we are right now is clearly not going to be federally funded. And so, you know, I mean, I think all of us in different capacities have kind of come to this realization and said, we got to find a match between those who have the interest and the resources and those who have the capability and demonstrated success. And really take, you know, kind of, Karen, you're on the call. You kicked this gear a long time ago at last NAAA and said, we had better practice back in 2006 than we used, so maybe we should do a better version this time.
Well, you know what I'm thinking? My simplest question to you, Frank, is whether the Federal Coordinating Council, or whatever it's called at this point, because I've heard this discussion from Bob Perciasepe, too, and I'm wondering if you folks have talked collectively about this.
You mean the federal group?
Yeah.
So this showed up
because,
at the tribe.
Because Bob, and my reason for asking that is Bob has said the same thing about EPA. It's not going to get funded from EPA anymore, and, you know,
right.
every federal agency. But he has also said, and it's my intention to make the links with the private sector
yes.
to pick up the
yes.
ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, that is exactly the conversation that is showing up more often. I don't know if it's comprehensive, but it's definitely happening more often. And that, you know, you could use the same thing with a lot of, you know, R&D, federal R&D that goes to operational and business mm-hmm. logic. Well, that doesn't work in education and outreach, but foundations and philanthropy really are where that engine comes from. So this showed up at the TRI-PI meeting. In the NOAA meeting of that meeting with the PIs, we talked about, would there be a place for us to convene our investigators with a consortium of, you know, people who are, you know, non-federal funders, and really start building that matchmaking and having those conversations of transitioning successful projects. Yes.
Yeah.
That's starting to happen.
Well, and I think one of the most important points that has been made is that this round of strategic discussion can be based on all this data that's been collected and all the insights from that data that came from the first round of partnerships.
Yeah. It also comes from the other projects of merit that are related.
Right.
The ISE community funded out of NSF funded stuff that's not been considered. Polar programs did stuff. Bio did stuff. Other EHR programs did. Other NOAA programs did. Other agency programs like NIFA has done really rich and interesting work. Just to kind of round this out is if one of the things that is also clear is that the interfaith community has done some really rich and interesting work on the effective. And let's not only think from the brain here. And so the models for civic science literacy that John Miller has put forward lays out some really interesting insights on how all these pieces of a human's experience and ways of knowing intersect that are really richer and wider than just, you know, science literacy focused on climate or global change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's that work? How's that work?
Well, I don't know how the whole thing works, but I think the richest thing that I've heard right now is developing that logic model to look at that big picture of look at what all those pieces are and how we can visualize that big. And to recognize, it's really going to take all of us in acting in a lot of different ways, but if there is at least some kind of overview so people know how their niche is fitting into the whole, that would be really helpful.
Yeah. I mean, the best line I've ever heard in this that's really quite simple to characterize is the line that Ed Maybach and Tony Leiserwitz use, which is, you know, an appropriately simple message repeated often by a variety of trusted sources.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a really simple recipe, incredibly hard to deploy at a Duluth, Minnesota level. But just to bring it back for you, Krista.
I'm here. I'm listening. I'm engaged.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's ultimately the trusted sources and the appropriately simple, repeated often.
Yeah,
that's kind of what we're talking about in time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where I am right now, is that this larger model that all of us kind of see are parts, and that model should be reinforced and built from within the research-based logic, not just, you know, somebody's thinking.
Seat of our pants, yeah.
Well, we did that in 2006, and that didn't work out so well.
I think another one that's really good is instead of assigning blame, to take responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, no blame here, Marta. You're absolutely right.
No, I don't mean that you were suggesting that, but I think that on a very basic level, that's one of the things that's so hard for people to grasp. And, you know, as we all drive our cars instead of riding the bus, there's just 100,000 ways, you know, that...
Oh, that blame. I see.
You know, just...
And each of us can take another step, the next step. There's always more...
Mm-hmm.
There's a continuum of actions that we fall on.
Well, Jeff Ann Stiles at the TRIPI meeting put it really nicely, because he said that there's a rich opportunity between individual action and international climate negotiation. Between those two is a lot of levels where you can really do sizable. John Krosnick's research says, you know, you have to have solutions that are commensurate to the problem. And that's why individual doesn't work, because it just doesn't feel like you're ever getting anywhere. International is just way too complicated, and no progress has really been made. But national, state, regional, there's big stuff going on that feels like you're making a difference. but you're not having to solve the whole thing all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff going on at that level that's really feels good and feels like you're making progress, and we got to make progress, and it reinforces itself.
Yeah.
As opposed to like we're failing. It just doesn't build much momentum.
I would love to share with you one line that that the judges in this decision made today that just blows me away. The court was hearing petitioners from industry and states, and one of the complaints of the petitioners was that they were trying to, you know, call into question IPCC science. It all goes back to those emails. And the judges wrote in their decision, this is how science works. EPA is not required to reprove the existence of the atom every time it approaches a scientific question.
That's great.
I just love it. And it said, petitioners are actually...
I am writing this down. This is excellent.
And then they said, ultimately, the petitioners are asking us to reweigh the scientific evidence before EPA and reach our own conclusion, and this is not our role.
Yeah.
All right.
I really understand it. Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This reminds me of Mark's comments around looking at all scientific theories as having both sides.
Yes,
there are
yes,
a few things that have been decided.
Right. So, guys, I know I sent us into an interesting place with no real clear next step, and I'm sensitive to that, but. I think it's a good thing for us to focus on some time. And those who are interested in this, I'm not sure where this is all going to go, but I think that there's some big next steps that need to help us here.
Yeah, no, I think that by raising and having the discussion, the people, all of us, will be more aware and cognizant of when opportunities come up. So I think that
Great.
Will help us move forward.
Well, yeah. One of the things that's coming up is, I mean, just as AGU and other folks have conferences, so does the National, Council on Foundations and the Environmental Grantmakers Association and, those folks. So, maybe those deadlines would be good to have in mind so that perhaps presentations could be suggested at those convenings.
Yeah.
To get
people
to think about them.
Opportunities for grantmakers.
Yeah.
Do they have board meetings or higher-level engagements?
Yes. I mean, I can't tell you exactly when they are, but yes, for sure. So that could be also, and I think, Frank, as a funder, or, you're going to be if it can go funder to funder, that's going to be the best kind of leveraging.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about, is because there is a coordinated strategy of the federal program officers who fund grants like this, and I'm encouraging them to grow the number of officers from a variety of different organizations or parts of agencies who kind of would go to them and say, look, we've done a lot of innovation. You might want to look at this as an area rich for, extending your work from a body of practice that have shown results on key and important issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you talking about USGCRP as the...
Well, I mean, that's where that's under.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about like ELG at NOAA and CSEP Phase 2 and others at NSF and NASA at NICE and NIFA and others.
Okay.
You guys all hunt these things. You know what I'm talking about. It depends on the hunting grounds.
I was going to ask for a glossary.
I know. I want to know. What's ELG?
If you want me to give you a glossary, I can. I can spell it all out, but we don't have that much time. We only have a minute or two.
Right.
I'm thinking of the acronyms that all of us face as we shift from venue to venue.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, guys. There is efficiency in acronyms, but it does also preclude people from understanding what the hell I'm talking about. It obscures and illuminates.
Right.
Sorry.
You're allowed.
Anyway, but, so look, if you guys are interested in kicking this around some, if anybody on the call, just please let me know and let's take it further.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, well, we will talk again next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I've already received your email, so thanks, Frank and Tamara.
You're welcome.
Most welcome.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.